Hi, everybody. This is Steve Savitsky, and welcome back to Savitsky Talks. And today we have Rabbi Yisachar Dov Kukowski, who is the director of OU Kosher Israel Department, who lives in Yerushalayim. And it is a great pleasure for me to have you on the program. Rabbi Kukowski, how are you today?
Very good, Baruch Hashem. Thank you.
Good to hear that.
Yourself?
So, Baruch Hashem, I'm doing really, really great. I miss you. I haven't seen you in a while. The next time I come, I have to stop by to say hello because I haven't done it the last few times. Absolutely. So we're not talking about politics, okay? We're going to stay away from that. We're going to stay away from what's going on in Israel. We're going to talk about an article you wrote for the Jewish Action, which is basically so important because this year, God willing, we're going to have Shemitah. And it changes a lot of things in Israel. So let's begin with when does it start exactly?
It's a good question. The actual Shemitah starts with Rosh Hashanah for the forthcoming year. But some of the implications for Shemitah already started about a month before, and the preparations that have already been underway for a while.
Okay, like what? What do you mean? What do you mean by doing started before? How does that work?
Things that are things that the planting is always done before, or certain types of work are done before for things that are going to be afterwards, already problematic in the first to do beforehand. So during the Elul, so to speak, the month before Rosh Hashanah, there are certain types of things that you can't do because it's quite clear that you're doing it only for the sake of Shemitah.
I got you. Okay. So, I mean, in Israel now, I guess people are preparing for Shemitah. And so the article talks about, you know, the whole concept of, you know, what is it and so on. One of the things I found very interesting that I'm sure most people don't concentrate on, when you talk about the Kedusha Shvius, okay, and you say that, moreover, this is what I'm quoting, okay, anyone can take what he or she needs from another produce. What does that mean?
Okay, so the thing is like this. During Shemitah, everything needs to be completely hefker, completely ownerless, so to speak. The Torah says that it has to be ownerless to the extent that the bentuch of the chayas of sada, livestock and wild animals even, should be able to access the food and eat it. So during Shemitah, we said you're not allowed to harvest the food for commercial purposes. So Farmer Joe can't go and harvest the stuff that he grows in order to sell it. However, he has to allow anybody to come and take it, and anybody can come and take a sufficient amount for them and their family, and if they're going to be having guests for Shabbos or whatever it is, to be eaten in the near future.
Okay, so now wait a second. So could he take his own also?
Yeah.
He could.
And it's hefker, it's ownerless, so I'm not any worse off than somebody else.
I see.
But
so
again, I can't take enough to sell or something like that, but I can take for me, my wife, my children, people who frequent my house, you know, that type of stuff.
So actually then, for the farmer in the seventh year, he probably has enough to eat for his whole family because he's living there, he's on the property, so whatever he needs, if he has, you know, cucumbers or tomatoes or whatever he's growing, then he's allowed to take them for the whole year, or is there a limit to a certain time he can't take anymore?
So there is a point in time, we actually don't talk so much about this in the article, which is referred to as Sha'as Habior, the time of relinquishing whatever you have. That is like it's a pasuk says, because it says that when it's basada, when it's in the fields, and the animals can access it and can eat from it, and anybody who wants can eat from it. So then you're allowed to keep a certain stock of it in your home for self-consumption.
Mm-hmm.
But once it's no longer in the field, so chazal said what you need for immediate purposes, for the next three meals, for you and anybody else in your family, you can keep in your house. But anything above and beyond that, if you still have some sort of stock, so you have to once again relinquish the ownership from what you've acquired for yourself from the hefker of the seventh year.
Okay.
And that means you put it back outside in a place where more than three people would frequent it. in the amount of time that you left it outside for. And you have to allow that theoretically other people could come and claim those food products for themselves. And then if, as that time's elapsed, nobody's come and claimed them, so then you can go and you can collect them for yourself.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So, in a way, I kind of surmised from the article. Tell me if I could be wrong about this, okay? But I surmised from the article that actually, if you could eat Peiro Shemitah, because it has the Kedushas Eretz Yisrael, it has the holiness of the land, that's preferable. So, I mean, in a way, if you live in Israel and you could find the farm in which they didn't do, we'll talk about the various, ways now that people, use, what they do as far as, how they allow other people and how they could sell it and so on. But if you actually decide to just leave it as it is and people came, that's kind of a higher level, isn't it, in a way?
So definitely opinions that maintain that. Nobody maintains there's a problem with eating Kedushas Shvi'as, as long as it's eaten in the right way, but their opinions, their Ramban seems to imply that maybe there's even a mitzvah or something like that to eat Kedushas Shvi'as, to eat the sabbatical produce.
Right.
So there's definitely people that maintain, and then more Kabbalistic types of Shvi'as, Chassidish Shvi'as, they put a tremendous emphasis on this. There's a tremendous amount of Kedusha that a person can absorb on a very physical type of level through eating Parashvius.
So now we have a problem in the sense that, we have farmers and they grow, produce and they have to make a living during that year and people have to eat. And so therefore, the first thing that happened was what they called the Heta Mechira, which was a pretty common thing and people relied on it for many years. You seem to imply that while it's there, and some people rely on it, it's not exactly the best approach to take. Am I correct in saying that?
I try not to give too much of an opinion on any of the approaches to Shemitah. I point out that there are various issues with Heta Mechira, and there always has been. It was never a system that was perfect and accepted as perfect. There was always something that had a matter of contention between the poskim throughout the modern settlement in Israel, even before the state of Israel. So it was always somewhat of a question, and it was never viewed by even most of the Rabbanim that created the Heta Mechira in the various Shemitah years. Most of them didn't themselves feel that it was the most optimum way around it. It was kind of a type of thing for the circumstances where you didn't have too many other options. Although there are and there were people who do maintain that it's one of the best approaches to Shemitah because it avoids as many shilas as possible. There might be one or two big issues to deal with, but if you've dealt with those issues, you kind of, you're Shemitah free and you're good to go.
Right.
But overall there are a number of issues, and therefore people who try to strive for a higher level of kashrus with less questions will usually not prefer the Heta Mechira venue. And then there's also what you mentioned about there might be a reason to want to eat things that are sanctified, that have Kedusha Shavuos. And if that's the case, so Heta Mechira, simply speaking, it could be that there is some sort of Kedusha Shavuos, but also that's more complicated. The way it's supposed to work is it's supposed to void all that produce from having any kedusha, special kedusha of kedusha shvius. And if that's the case, if somebody who would want to consume it, there would be another reason for them to look for a different approach, a different way to get their produce that it would actually be kedusha shvius.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, when I was reading it, it in a way it reminded me of selling the chametz on Pesach. But I guess the other factor is that you're really not supposed to sell the land to a non-Jew. And so, therefore, that's the problem there. Otherwise, it would be similar to Chametz on Pesach, wouldn't it, in a way?
Okay, that is a good point. And actually, Rabbi Saul Reitschik, I think, he had his doubts about Heta Mechira for the same reason that he had his doubts about Mechira's Chametz. But there are some differences. And the differences are like this, is that if, so, you know, how there's people who try, you know, now it's become a new thing that somebody sold their chametz and you're very super firm and you don't buy chametz that was sold on Pesach. So not sold on Pesach, but somebody that was sold before Pesach to a non-Jew to circumvent having chametz around and being able to buy it back and going further with it. So the people who won't go to a store and buy from a store that sold their chametz before Pesach for Pesach and then bought it back because they say, I don't know, maybe it wasn't a good mechira, maybe there were a lot of questions about it. So actually there's a big difference between those two, between heter mechira and mechira's chametz in that sense, because mechira's chametz, if somebody sold the chametz, it was the only reason not to buy chametz that was kept over Pesach by a Jew is because Chazal didn't want Jews to keep chametz over Pesach in order to sell it, in order to make the chametz of the main exerts or a bit of an act not to buy it. Therefore, I have a hard time believing that somebody who really did what he thought was right, and he went to a rabbi, it says in Shulchan Aruch, you can make a mechiras chametz, and he went to a rabbi, and he did a mechiras chametz. Now, it could be that I have my doubts on it because other Rishonim and other things, whatever, it's not so clear exactly how to do it. But it wouldn't be fair to say that Chazal would say that such a person who did that, you can't buy their stuff from him after Pesach. Whereas with Heter Mechira, if it would be problematic, so then it would actually change the status of the fruit totally. Right. That it would be fruit that have Kedusha Shvuos, and if it would be vegetables, it gets into something else, which we mentioned, which we're talking about in the article, Sichem, which is a different problem, and the Sichem would be forbidden to eat. And not because the guy's not a nice guy, not because the guy didn't do what's right, but because I really maintain that this was still, it still had Kedusha Shvuos, the ground had Kedusha Shvuos, so whatever grows from it has Kedusha Shvuos, and therefore, it doesn't make a difference that they change something about it through some sort of thing that I don't hold by, so to speak, and I would view it still as being Kadosh Kedusha Shvuos. So I think there's a little bit of a difference in that sense.
Okay. So they found another way, which seems to be a little bit better, which is the Otzer Beisdin system, which I guess they sell. This one wasn't clear about also, that who actually gives permission for the Beisdin? Like, you're the farmer. So do you give the Beisdin permission to then sell your farm to the Beisdin? Is that what happens? How does it work?
Okay, so I'm going to clarify. Let's talk about how it works, and let's talk about the more halachic how it works.
Okay.
The practical how it works is, you would need the farmer to really come and say, this is my land. I want to keep Shemitah, the Mahadrim, so to speak. You know, I want to keep it in the best way possible. I don't want to work the land. I don't want to, not do a Heter Mechira or something like that. I want to, but at the same time, I have food, it's going to be growing, and if I don't take any care of it, next year it's all going to be gone. I want to be able to do the minimal amount that I might be allowed to do if I'm helping other people get food from it, and I want to be able to at least have a job during Shemitah, so I'm happy to harvest the fruit and get paid for my labor involved in harvesting the fruit, and please help me out.
So you're not getting paid. The farmer is not getting paid for how well the field does or the farm does. He's going to get paid per hour for working, and that's basically how he supports himself during the year.
Right.
Okay.
And what actually happens is it's not that he's giving it to me because it's Hefker. It doesn't belong to him during Shemitah. So therefore, what happens is that Bezdin is, so to speak, being Zohar is claiming from Hefker, and it's still considered anything that belongs to Bezdin because Bezdin's part of all the whole Am Yisrael. So it still has, from a halachic vantage point, we still view it as being Hefker, as being ownerless. And then they carry it forth, they bring it to you in their jurisdiction, in their ownerless jurisdiction, so to speak, to distribution centers, where then anybody can come and buy it, but they're not really buying it. They're paying money before they take it. They're paying money for the services of you bringing it to their door. For the farmer who watered it and cut down the fruit, for whoever was the middleman that brought it to the distribution center and to the people who might be working in the distribution center. So you're just covering their costs all and it isn't profit mm-hmm. because of the fruit.
Okay. And that seems to be a pretty popular approach these days, isn't it?
It's becoming more and more popular by every shmita.
I see. And the basin is always the local basin? How does that work? Who's the basin?
So you have the bigger Otsa basins that are, you know, pretty big. Rabbanut Harashit maybe even recognizes an Otsa basin, and when they go around before Shemitah, making sure that everybody's keeping Shemitah in some way, whether it's through Hatim Mechira or Otsa basin, or just being Shemit the Karka, or it's just letting the ground do whatever it does and not touching it at all. Whatever approach they're taking, they want to make sure that all the farmers have taken some sort of approach.
Okay.
And so they have those are dozens that they work with. And then there are also sorts of smaller ones that are more private and may have, you know, more particular, you know, there's a rabbi that oversees things very closely and there's a very particular set of piskei din that are followed for the way they work and what they allow and what they don't allow, etc. So mm-hmm. those sorts of different things.
Okay. And then, of course, because of technology, things change, and so you write a little piece about, I guess it's called Matzah Minutak.
Right.
And that's where it's really grown, not from the ground. I mean, this is a way they grow things in the greenhouses and things like that, correct?
Correct.
So that, I mean, is that plentiful? Is there a lot of that going on, or is that just still pretty small?
So that's probably one of these types of techniques that as the Shemitahs come along, every Shemitah does more and more of it. The truth of the matter is, it's not so different than how a good part of the greens I mean lettuce, mm-hmm. spinach, various herbs, you know, whether it's mint, basil, thyme, you know, all sorts of different things like that, grow in Israel, celery, all sorts of different things like that, parsley, mm-hmm. grow in Israel like that all the time, cabbage. Broccoli, you know, all the greens, that type of stuff that are more leafy and very often have bug problems. And Israel has been done a large part to make the province more bug-free. But they grow in greenhouses already, and the technique that spurred the idea of matzah menutak, of having like an elevated growing mm-hmm. medium, came actually from a greenhouse effect type of theory, which was that since part of the whole greenhouse effect theory is that the water, it's in a more contained place, it's very hot, it evaporates, it goes back up, and the whole place stays more humid, which allows the plants to flourish more.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
what they did was they decided to even enhance that and make the water stay around much more than it shouldn't just get absorbed into the ground of the greenhouse. But they were planting in like a tub-like structure, very long tub-like structure, so that the water would stay, the soil would stay very moist because it was contained in a plastic or at some point in time a cement or whatever this type of structure, so mm-hmm. the moisture would stay in there and hang in much more and would create a much more enhanced greenhouse effect. So that's what started. It's therefore, it's not something which is like, you know, it sounds to people who never saw it before as being, you know, who knows what, but these things are really like a wedding hall size greenhouses, and there's tons of them all the time, and it's just making sure that the system works perfectly, that it doesn't, you know, that it doesn't fall apart and it doesn't have any areas of issues, because right. there's a hole in that plastic tub, so it's all considered attached to the ground, mm-hmm. you know, things like that. So it means a lot of pikuach, a lot of supervision
right.
to make sure that it meets the shmita mm-hmm. standards to make it not considered.
Sounds really fascinating. Just two or three other quick points. You mentioned that the rules in Shemitah applies basically to halachic Israel, okay? And so you mentioned in the article that a lot is not part of that, which means if you're a farmer in a lot, you could buy, I could buy fruits and vegetables from that farmer, correct?
Correct.
Okay, now, where exactly... I'm going to say, what are the borders? Now, let's talk about, and we don't want to talk about Inyon and Diyoma, but let's talk about Gaza for a moment. Is that part of halachic Israel?
According to most opinions, Gaza is halachic Israel, but I have heard that there are opinions that maintain that it isn't. There might be a little piece of it that isn't, you know, it all depends exactly how far down you draw and, you know, how far out. Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, you have to really know what you're doing because, I mean, you're reading the articles. You're saying that if someone has leftovers and, like, the peels of, like, potato, apples or things like that, you just can't throw them out, right? What do you have to do with them?
So, traditionally, what people did in Israel was for people who eat only Kedusha Shvias or maintain that even Nachri, non-Jewish produce and all that type of stuff has Kedusha Shvias to it, so therefore almost everything they buy ends up being Kedusha Shvias. Even if they were buy at the Mechira, if they maintain that Nachri, the non-Jewish produce, has Kedusha Shvias just because it grew in Israel during the Shemitah year. So then what they do is they have what they call Shemitah Pach in Hebrew, which is basically, you know, not a garbage can, but they leave outside so they don't have to deal with the odor, and they allow the leftovers to rot inside those cans, and usually they'll have two or three, because you can't want something semi-rotten, so say it might still, because we're not sure that it's rotten enough to throw it out yet, so it needs to be a little bit longer, but you don't want to throw in the fresh stuff, because then you're ruining the fresh stuff right away, so usually they'll have two or three. There are opinions, Rav Moshe Sternbach actually writes this in some of his Sfarim, that you just have to wrap it up or double wrap it in a plastic bag or something like that, and you can toss it into the garbage. What I recommend, actually, is having a Shemitah Pach, but to avoid the question of things that are semi-rotten and not semi-rotten, and to avoid a little bit of the stench that comes from rotting fruit and vegetables, is to first wrap them up in one plastic bag, put it into the Shemitah Pach, wrap it up in one plastic bag, and then you don't have to worry about one rotting the other one out, and you don't have to worry. You have to worry less about the smell.
Mm-hmm. Oh, interesting. And just two other things. One quick one. You say here, Shemitah produce cannot be taken outside of Eretz Yisrael. So, in other words, you're not talking about where you sold it to a Beis Din or there's a Heta Mechira. You're talking about if it's really real Shemitah, the land wasn't sold, that produce cannot be eaten outside of Eretz Yisrael. You can't take it back to the States or something like that, right?
Right. And then somebody who does use that, the Mechira, and views it as not having any Kedusha Shvia, so they would be able to take it out just like any other food that came from Chutz Laaretz or that came from a non-Jew in Israel or something like that. But if you're using Otsa Bezdin, that has Kedusha Shvia, so then it does have Kedusha Shvia, and it would be a problem to take it out of Israel. It doesn't necessarily mean that if it is already out of Israel, you can't consume it. That's a different question, which is a matter of contention to a certain extent. But there's definitely room to be lenient. But that's one of the big questions about exporting a slogan, which is important. It's not going to be relevant this year, but it'll be relevant next year. That the Esrog export from Israel is going to be severely diminished because a lot of those Esrog farms are Otsa Bezdin, they have Kedusha Shvias, and it's not so simple to export them to.
Really? Oh, interesting. Farms. Okay. Last question. OU a position on Shemitah? I mean, we obviously give Hashgacha on a lot of products, and I'm sure those products use a lot of ingredients and so on. So, what's our position as far as that?
Okay, our position is as follows. First of all, getting back to with one of the earlier questions about Heta Mechira, if it's, it's a matter of contention, it might not be the best way around it, and there's all sorts of different technical issues, how to make it best as possible. So we feel the things that we're doing for export to the U.S., there's no reason to get involved in those types of issues because there's enough food in America without having to deal with things that, are a matter of contention. That's number one. Number two is things that we do locally in Israel. There also isn't really much of a reason for us to work with Heter Mechira because the Rabbinat Hershit does that already. So somebody who does want to rely on it, they have the Rabbinat Hershit, and we only start from a level a little bit above that, where we're trying to say we're not taking things at the bare minimum for people who want to search for something a little bit higher, question free, etc. And therefore, we didn't see a point in getting involved in that in Israel either. Okay. oats are bagged in. There might be certain things that we'll do here in Israel this coming year for the local market. But again, because things that have the Shvius sanctification can't be exported, it would only be for things that are done locally. Oats are bagged in doesn't work for a restaurant for two reasons. First of all, you can't do business with foods that have Shvius sanctification. That's number one. And a restaurant, the whole purpose is to do business with the food. And number two is you don't have what to do with the leftovers from the food. It becomes very complicated when they clear the table.
Right.
So in restaurants and things like that, we'll only allow either Nachri, non-Jewish produce, which we do take the opinion that it does not have Kedusha Shuas, and things that grow either in Chutzlaret, or they call Haravat Yerol Meat, which is like the area next to Eilat, and that type of area.
Mm-hmm.
That's not that small of an area. It's usually 30 kilometers north of Eilat would still be considered like that.
Exactly.
And so that's by and large what we'll do in the restaurant and what we'll do for productions that are made here. The spices will come from Chutzlaret, or they'll be shisha. You know, the spices, dried spices, you can use things that were from the sixth year.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll try to use things from the sixth year and then use very fresh things from the eighth year, the year after Shemitah.
Tremendous. So listen, thank you so much. The article was fantastic. The interview really, really elucidates it even more, and I appreciate it. So we've been talking to Rabbi Kukowski, who is the director of OU Kosher Israel Department. Thank you so much, and thank you for being on the program. I appreciate it.
Okay, thank you very much, and it's great to speak to you again.
Absolutely. Be well. Bye-bye.